This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
From Space City, USA, Paul Bosch presents Wrestling Spectacular, matching the world's top wrestlers in fierce competition.
Welcome to This Week in Wrestling, NWA On Demand. I am Pete, and I'm with my friend Johnny, formerly of Titans of Wrestling. Johnny, how you doing, man?
Well, first of all, you know what? The way I see it, it's like Titans is like being in the Marines, and you're never an ex-Marine. So you were always Titans, my friend. Doing a little logy today because I made a cardinal error. You know how every now and then you really feel like having a Big Mac? Unless you're a fan. You know, but I was like, for me, every couple of years, I was like, I think I could like eat a Big Mac.
It's usually like then, a hungover, like, man, I could usually use a Big Mac right now.
Yeah, for me, and I was just like, for lunch or even dinner or whatever, you're just like, I don't have a Big Mac. And inevitably, an hour later, I feel like I'm going to die. Yeah. It's just the worst. And today, had to pick the shortest drive-through, you know, while I was working, and go to McDonald's. Hey, and get an Egg McMuffin. They got that all day now, and that's actually good.
Yeah, I like that. I agree with you there.
Yeah, and that's like the one thing. It's like, no, that's actually. I mean, I'm sure it's awful for you, but it
tastes well. The breakfast.
Good.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to fuck up an egg, you know.
They actually have to. Yeah, it's a real egg.
Yeah, egg with Canadian bacon. How fucking hard is that?
Yeah, English muffin and cheese. Oh, this show brought to you by McDonald's. but not for long. And then I noticed I'd seen an ad they have. This is grotesque. A special thing. The Super Big Mac.
Yeah, they have choice of three of them. Like, there's the mini and the medium, the normal Big Mac. And now there's, like, the ultimate Big Mac or whatever.
The ultimate. And it's just grotesque, like, eight stacks of meat. And then they had the Mac Jr. And I thought to myself, hey, I can satisfy the taste that I'm craving right now. That can't be too bad, you know. It's not the same thing. It's small. It's just one patty and the bun and the sauce. And I ate it an hour later. That was around 2 o'clock this afternoon. I still feel like shit.
Yeah, I avoid McDonald's. It's of all the fast food places, that's the place I usually avoid the most. Because I think it's just the dead fucking worst and stuff.
And it's funny because usually it does have the longest lines. Of any fast food place, which is always baffling.
It's propaganda for the kids, baby. That's what it is, man.
I guess, but this time it wasn't. You know, I was like, oh, I'm going to make the choice. But I remember being a little kid in the 70s, like some of the stuff we're going to watch, going to McDonald's was like, you're right, that was a treat.
Yeah.
That was a big deal, going to McDonald's.
Yeah, I make my debut, I make my returns usually around McRib season for McDonald's. And as a kid, I loved them. As an adult, I still have to buy them, even though they're fucking terrible. I mean, it's just like, this isn't even good, but yet I still want to go there and buy them. I don't understand.
And for me, for a long time, it was the Shamrock Shake.
Do they even do that anymore?
Yes, it's back this month. And I almost got one because I was like, I remember when I was a little kid, that was like my favorite once a year thing. But then I remembered that I think 3 years ago I got one, and I think it almost put me in the hospital. It was so awful.
It can't even be good mint.
You know, it's not awful, Pete.
What?
This footage we're about to talk about.
Good point. That's a segue. Good segue. That was very Martin Scorsese. Very fucking good. But hey, yeah, let's talk about it, man. We open up. We have a bunch of matches we're looking at today. We're going to look at Les Thornton and Jonathan Boyd, the Sheep Herder. We're going to look at Mr. Ito and Nick Kozak. we're going to look at the spoiler and the co-star from Escape from New York, Ox Baker.
damn
Skippy. Hacksaw Duggan and Buzz Sawyer in a coal miner's glove match. Slater and Bob Sweetan and Dick Slater and Butch Reed, no DQ. But we'll, that's
hold,
the step
hold on,
anyway.
Hold on. Hold on.
I hear you have a big spiel for that, so God bless you. That's the main event. But we're going to start off with the opener, and that's Les Thornton versus Jonathan Boyd. And Thornton's a guy I really like because I like grappling. And on the footage we've seen here, he's looked really good on grappling and stuff. And Jonathan Boyd is, you know, the sheep herder, the wild brawler, the former kangaroo. So I was curious how this was going to be. And this is from January 4th, 1980. Jonathan Boyd, full of hair, so he hadn't lost. I think he lost a hair match. For some reason, I want to say Roddy Piper, and I know I'm wrong. But I know he lost his hair to somebody because eventually he's a bald motherfucker. But what we got here was rather interesting. And I mean, I liked the match, but I thought it needed to get a few more minutes, and it would have taken it to like the next level. Like, I enjoyed Thornton's arm work here, and I thought it was compelling, and it looked really hurty. I thought his European forearms were just plain nasty. Like, nasty. Like, they were some nasty-looking lifters. I enjoyed Boyd constantly moving and fighting underneath. I added an element to the match. And this was kind of like the wrestler versus the brawler. And we see Boyd start working the leg, and then Thornton dung it on a knee lift. I thought that was cool. But then we go right to the finish, and I would have liked to see a few more minutes of the legwork leading to more to the finish. Still, I thought they had a good match with the time given, about 2.5 stars. Both guys were solid in their roles, but Thornton is a guy, I whenever I see his name pop up since the footage we've seen so far, I've been a big fan of his, and I feel like some of the grapplers out there now who are working this type of style could benefit by watching him. By not only is he working holds, but they're holds that look like they legitimately hurt you. And sometimes the grapplers don't understand that. Like, his moves are there to try to win the match instead of trying to pop the crowd in a way. What do you make of this, man?
Excuse me. Well, to your point, that's one of the things I dislike about a lot of the whole modern grappling thing. I was like, well, when does it look like it hurts?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, that's really clever, but, you know, and Thornton does have that. I watch Les Thornton, and I go, especially here, you know, and I go, damn, that guy's a really good wrestler,
yeah.
And there's just nothing there.
Yeah, it's never been your thing, Matt Work. I mean, I understand that. Well, I mean, that sometimes you like it, but no, a lot of times it needs a little bit of something to get Johnny to really invest in.
No,
but you realize it's good.
Yeah, well, for me, it's there's no. Like, I like guys who could do really cool mat work if they've got a lot of charisma.
Right.
Yeah. You know, and he just doesn't. But who knows? You know what? I've never heard any of his promos. Maybe he was great. So I don't really know. You know, so when I think about it, I'm like, I guess I'd have to see some promos to figure that shit out, because he was showing personality in the ring. I was just like, oh, he's got the Pete Rose haircut, which is always a turn off for me because I hate Pete Rose.
My mother's least favorite baseball player of all time is Pete Rose.
Dude, I was a Phillies. You know, I was a Phillies guy, and when we got Pete Rose in '80, I refused to cheer for him, and I still was like, as a little kid, fuck Pete Rose.
It was the All-Star, not All-Star game, it was something where he ran into Duffy Dyer, who was the
didn't fuck them all up.
Yeah, that's for my mother, just despised him ever since.
Yeah, the guy does that in the All-Star game. It's like, oh, fuck yourself.
Yeah.
Anyway, still should be in the Hall of Fame, but still. Anyway, you got Boyd, besides just the hair, he's jacked.
Yeah.
He's like naturally jacked. One of those jacked guys with a gut, but it's like a solid gut and real big arms, which that took me aback as much as the hair did. I was like, damn, Jonathan Boyd looks like a badass. I'm not used to – I always liked him, because I'd see him in the 80s and stuff, but to see him looking like, no, he's a badass. But what was great is they were doing this long, pardon me, hair pulling gimmick, where Boyd was claiming his hair was getting pulled, and the ref kept breaking it. And there were some people at ringside. One person. Sounds like an old woman who is loud. And she screams, "He didn't touch him!" And then when he says, he pulled my hair, "He's a liar! He's a liar! No, no, no!" And then when Les is on offense, he's on doing the arm. "Break it, Les!"
Yeah.
Like, damn. I love that person, whoever that is. Paul gets in a great line. He's talking about how evenly matched they are. And he's like, "They're evenly matched in all sorts of things, in this skill and this size and in other measurements." Paul, what are you talking about, sir?
Mr. Bosch, take it easy.
Ooh. I was like, "Oh, really?" But my favorite Paul thing was, I guess he doesn't realize that Australia is not part of the British Empire, because he introduces it as two sons of the British Empire about to go at it. I'm like, "Well, no, not in a long, long time."
Probably when Paul Bosch was in the military, they were.
He was in the military, they were. That's kind of funny. And when it's almost funny, your point of being like, and the finish came out of nowhere, because he says, "Les Thornton cut down in his prime." And I was like, "You can't possibly mean his career." Was he? Oh, I get it. I was like, "Yeah, that was kind of out of nowhere, wasn't it?"
Yeah.
The person who was screaming was not on camera, and I wish they were, because the people who were at ringside all looked like they were a bunch of like Paul Bosch's wealthy friends who got ringside tickets, and they were in like leather sports coats and nice dresses, and they were all just like sitting on their hands, completely bored with the wrestling. And meanwhile, the person off camera is having an epileptic fit over the wrestling. It's like, put the camera on that person. And Paul, I couldn't figure out what this was, because he normally does spots like, "Hey, be sure to go down to such and such on this on 3rd and Broadway." And he just goes, "In Love TV, there was a lot of anger on this match, but none between Gary and Mike, where there's nothing but love and TVs." I was like, and he does it a few times on this footage. I was like, it must be an appliance store. I didn't know, there was no context to it. I was like, what is he talking about? It took me forever. But but it's really neat to see Les Thornton, because I've never seen him when he was old.
Right.
And Jonathan Boyd when he was old. Seeing them young here, they're good. I mean, they're really good. I enjoyed this match a lot.
You know, Jonathan Boyd's a guy, I've always liked his promos. What have you thought of his promo work and stuff?
Oh, I loved it. Because I remember I got to see him in Memphis.
Right.
You know, when I go see my aunt once a summer and I get to watch 2 weeks of Memphis wrestling, if I was lucky, at least twice, I was there when Boyd was there, and he'd be nice. Cutting the promos, and Rip Morgan would be behind him or whatever. And it was awesome. I got to see him versus Terry Taylor and Steve Kern. In a cage that looked like it was going to fall on the crowd at the Louisville Gardens. When I was like 15 or 16.
Yeah, he's always liked him. Where I saw him, it was like on Portland footage. I was like, wow, this guy is on hell of a promo. And then everywhere I saw him, he was a guy you believed was like crazy but mean, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There was no like, man, what a phony, you know? He always had that aura of believability in everything you said. And you kind of believed that the guy was crazy and also in the same manner. And, I think he's one of the most underrated promo guys around.
I wish there was more.
Yeah. Huh?
I said I wish there was more. You know.
Yeah. When we did part one of our talkers, Boyd was a guy who was on my list of underrated 70s talkers, which we didn't really get to really explore because I thought he was just tremendous in a lot of the stuff I've seen, but. We didn't get a promo here, but again, pretty solid work. But man, it was kind of funny. I think it was like last week or the week before you were mentioning, I wonder what type of worker Nick Kozak was, I believe you mentioned and stuff. And lo and behold, we got a Mr. Ito, Nick Kozak, from the same date, January 4th, 1980. What did he impress you? I mean, since you were kind of wondering about him.
Well, I don't know how much I was wondering about if he was a good wrestler, except where I was making 70s jokes or about his look or whatever. But because you know who he looks like, especially here. With, I mean, and he is jacked. He's a jacked old man. He's wrestling, and which by and by the way, I'll say he's great. You know, and it was amazing. But he looks like late 70s era Sean Connery with a few more muscles.
I can see that. I can buy into that.
You know, that's he's slightly balding and gray. He's got thin mustache. He's still kind of jacked, and he's all man. And he's all man. and he has a match with Mr. Hito here, and I thought he we'll get it. Let you go first, because the most shocking thing here was Nick Kozak, he's all muscle. And you figure, well, he's an old guy. He was a muscle guy. He's probably a bit of a stiff. And then they're like, oh, no, no.
Yeah, no.
I'm sure in his day, he was like an Antonina Rocca kind of guy. He was really like an old-fashioned, high-flying, 50-style wrestler who still has a great build. You know, and I'm even more of a fan of him now.
Yeah, no, I enjoyed the match. I absolutely love the opening stuff. Like the salt ceremony stuff always work. And JJ was here, and he was just fabulous, just absolutely fabulous. And I think, I mean, we've seen him now a few times in Houston. I think I like him more in Houston than I did as a horseman. Totally different type of style of manager. He's more plays more of the buffoon, or he's more or exaggerated here. And he was a lot more low key with the horseman. But my God, I love him as this bumbling, you know. The spot with Patera where he took the bump and the cigar goes flying.
I mean, 10 feet in the air, amazing.
And here he's just again. He's just hamming it up to the camera. You know.
Yeah. While you're talking about it, let me add. Because I made a note too. What he was doing was being the manager character of the day. They wear big, loud clothes and they smoke a big cigar. And that's my favorite thing. You know, I was thinking about this the other day. If I was to name my one favorite thing about professional wrestling, easy managers. That was always my favorite thing when I was a kid. I loved managers. I loved the concept of it. I loved the over-the-topness of it. I loved the feeling that I could be one of them. I know I'm not going to be a wrestler because I was a skinny little kid.
Right.
But I could be that guy. You know, that was – that I loved that.
Yeah, Jimmy Hart. People tell me to shut up all the time. Yeah, you know.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, like, you'd see Jimmy Hart or the Grand Wizard or Albano even, you know. He was short. He was fat. Yeah. But you feel you could be that guy. Anyway – there was a clear shot of his get up that we talked about last week, and it's totally a gym thing. So he's kind of playing on like the rich asshole who's in his workout gear, like very, very 80s. And it looks like, for people who can't see this, and you should, because you should get the service. Simon Dean, remember Simon Dean?
Yep.
It looks like that, except it's Lakers yellow and purple.
Yep. And he's a Lakers guy. He's always been a Lakers guy, yeah.
Oh, is he really a Lakers guy?
Yep.
Oh, I didn't know. That's even better. I didn't know that. But, so it's so much fun to see him like this, and I enjoy it more than the horseman. But for the horseman thing, you figure because he even tried so many different styles, and that was the most successful, was just businessman.
Yeah.
And it worked. But seeing him do this style is a blast.
Totally. Yeah, I mean, he's been a pleasure here in Houston, I got to say. And
he shaves his sideburns into J&J.
Yeah, that's awesome. Isn't it?
Awesome. It's great.
And he has a history in Texas, being from starting in Amarillo and all this stuff. So it's just neat full circle. And I thought the crowd was really into this as an undercard bout. I thought Kozak like salutes the flag, and he gets the crowd like 100% behind him as like the USA babyface hero. And you can kind of buy Kozak as like a Marine, because he has like that Marine type build type of thing as a old military looking guy. But I really liked him underneath. I liked Mr. Ito, the work on top. I thought he was really going out to the leg. I thought that was well done and set up pretty much the narrative of the match. But what was so good was Kozak was such a solid as a babyface and was solid in his role as fired up babyface, old man fired up babyface, where, you know, he didn't have to do a whole lot, but his movements and his charisma and his and the history of this town manifested itself here, and they all got behind him, and I thought it worked like gangbusters for what they were doing here. They weren't out to steal the show, but they were out to have a good fun match that the crowd should care about, and both guys played their roles perfectly. Ito as the Japanese evil foreigner, and Kozak was Mr. USA fighting the evil foreigner with the Houston crowd 100% behind him. I thought everything they did here worked, you know?
Oh, totally. And I also have Nick, he looks like that one dad in the neighborhood when you were a kid. There was like that one dad in the neighborhood who was kind of jacked.
Yes.
You know, like that. He looks like that guy. And he, so he salutes the flag. But the best thing was Mr. Hito's his ceremony with JJ was going on forever. Like, it was really long. And Paul goes, Mr. Hito has completed his gesture. Oh, I thought he did, because he just said he does some more. I laughed. And here's a cool thing about Nick here. He was doing a face lock. You know, and it was the rest hold or whatever, but it is a chance to take a breather, and he's doing it, and just as I was getting bored with it, he starts doing moves, and it was like the same thing was happening with the crowd. The crowd was going down, 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 down. He knew exactly the moment to get out of this before they are bored with it.
Yep.
And do some more stuff. He worked it down to the second. That is amazingly impressive. That, to me, that's the real skill in pro wrestling.
That's, yeah, art of psychology.
Do
that, yep.
Manipulate. And,
straight up psychology. Yeah. Yep.
That's the psychology, yeah. because his knee's being worked over, He goes on offense and he does a stomp onto Hito, and he slightly sells his knee just a little bit when he does the stomp, like, ugh. And I wrote down, he sells his knee after he does the stomp. Pete got half a rod.
It was a full rod, sir.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't want to presume. Okay. But so he's totally, it was so awesome. And then the last thing, during the face lock thing, Paul takes the opportunity to welcome the kids who come for their birthday.
Yep.
The thing you told me about, and he does this, and he's getting through most of the names. He's having a little bit of trouble with a few of the names. And then he gets to the last one, and the little girl's name was, I'm assuming, Lupe.
Yes.
And starts with, he goes, and Loopy, Salisa, Salias. And at first I'm like, Loopy? Like, who names their kid Loopy? Is this his nickname? And then he says her last name, and I go, oh, that's not okay.
Yeah, it's, you know, like Parv announcing Hispanic people's names.
Pretty much, because there was no, like, oh, and this white guy, you know, not knowing how to pronounce. No, this is purely innocent, because he's like, yeah. And she is celebrating her 12th birthday with her sister, and we'd like to thank them all for choosing Houston Wrestling as their birthday thing, which I still think is so cool that he announces the names on TV.
Yeah, I thought one of the names he named was, last name was Hickenbottom.
And it was close. It was close. Okay. But that wasn't it. I almost wrote it down. It wasn't Hickenbottom. It was something that sounded more like a Harry Potter character, like Higginpuffer.
Okay.
but I still think that's number one. I think it's a great promotion that he does, that he did.
Oh, yeah.
And the fact that the kids could go home watch the show and have their name announced on the wrestling show. That's make them go awesome. Bananas.
That is a really neat thing.
That's
yeah.
Awesome.
Totally imagine, neat.
Imagine if you were 12, you know, and like imagine I'm 12 and I'm watching WWF and Howard Finkel's doing the voiceover stuff talking about the matches. And we'd like to wish a happy birthday to Johnny Hedgepath. I'd be like, ugh.
Imagine if you were now and they said it. I mean, you'd pop if they heard you, your name.
Well, I wouldn't want them announcing my birthday.
Yeah, I know. God, he's old.
He's 27 years old and he still watches wrestling. What's wrong with him?
He must have been, he was born around Bruno Sammartino's era.
But no. They're going to have us all at ringside, it's just a bunch of kids and me, you know. And I'm knocking them out of the way to get on camera.
The kid. Yeah, that bully who steals the game, that foul ball from a kid or an home run.
Yay.
Oh, man. Yeah.
I think the go away here, because we already knew that JJ is awesome here. I always liked Hedo, but is Nick Kozak is a revelation.
Agreed. Yeah, totally fun worker. And he also worked Gino, and he was a similar role, and it was very fun and stuff. Yeah, so he was a replacement for I think David Von Erich was injured. He's fun. So if he's on the card, I'll be interested to see some more of him stuff for sure.
Were you thinking? Oh, look, it's an improvement.
But now the next match is the spoiler. Hey,
hold on. Let's restart. We want to do that now because you're going in and out on me, and it's definitely my internet connection. I just want to switch my internet connection.
Okay. Why don't we take a break, and we'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds as well. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, in our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super shows. Relive Wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We also have sports covered too with the Sports Lounge, the TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out on the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your...
And we are back, and we're going to be looking at the spoiler versus Ox Baker from January 4th, 1980. And also just something that we're not here looking at this footage, but always every January 4th for Houston, they always did the Battle Royal, which I always thought was kind of neat, a nice little tidbit. They did the two-ring Battle Royal, and that's where we got those neat-looking tag matches where they do it in two rings, which is just the only time I've ever seen that was in Houston. And I'm just throwing it out there just as a reminder.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. But Ox Baker, let's talk about him for a bit.
Oh, yeah.
Never a great worker where you say in between the rings. Like, you know, you knew he kind of like the Ivan Putsy, like a great character type of thing. But you just never know. But for me, I want to say I might have seen him beforehand, but I think Escape from New York was the first time I ever saw him. What about you?
Yeah, definitely. Because when Escape from New York came out, I was maybe 10 or 11, you know, something like that. And I was aware of wrestling at that age.
Yeah.
But I was not a fan. It was just like if it was Saturday afternoon and there was nothing on, put on wrestling. But I definitely saw Escape from New York, you know, and or whatever year it came out. But and then straight from there to the magazines.
Yeah, you probably saw them at the theater.
I think I did.
Really? Wow.
yeah, I think I did. Pretty sure I did.
And if no one's, if you guys haven't seen, if people out there haven't seen Escape from New York, it's one of those great guilty pleasure movies. I mean, it really is. It's not even a guilty pleasure. It's a
guilty pleasure.
It's a great fun movie, period. I mean, Snake Plissken. I mean, what a great name.
But then do yourself a favor. Do yourself a favor. Never, ever watch the sequel they did, like, 15 years later, Escape from L.A. It's awful.
Horrible. The CGI and Peter Fonda in it. Oh, gosh. I'm one of my favorite. I love that line. You're the Duke of New York. You're A number one. From what's his name? What's the actor's name?
Donald Pleasance.
Yep, from all the Halloween movies. So many great, great guys in that movie and actors. Yeah. And
I mean, if a lot of people look at it now, if you're young, and probably go, "It is cheesy as fuck." But you have to understand, at the time, it was awesome, therefore it's still a lot of fun. But he's one of the bad guys in it, and he's in it for like maybe 8 minutes, but it's a very memorable 8 minutes.
Yep, Ernest Borgnine. What's his name? Isaac Hayes. I mean,
What's her name? Was it Adrienne Barbeau?
Adrienne Barbeau. Blah blah blah.
Big titties.
She still looks incredible even now. She doesn't age, I don't think. What's his name? Who played her husband?
I don't remember. That was a long time ago. I haven't seen it in forever.
It makes me want to go watch it now. But Os Baker, I mean, he was only in it for a few minutes in the movie, but man, you remember him, right?
Oh, totally. He's iconic. There's people who were not wrestling fans. They wouldn't even know Ox's name, but if you showed him his picture, they go, "Oh yeah, the guy from Escape from New York," because he has eyebrows that are gigantic. He's got gigantic eyebrows, and his mustache is. It's hard to describe, but he looks unlike any other human being.
Yeah, totally unique look. He has this weirdo charisma about him.
I know. I've met him.
Yeah, just shoots out. I mean, it was sad late in life how what happened with him and stuff. I don't want to say he got beat up, but he was being abused by the people in charge of his health care and stuff, and that just sucks.
Oh shit, really?
Yeah, it just absolutely sucks. Mm. But
because I met him, I've told you that story, but I met him at my first Ring of Honor show. There was all these merch tables and autograph signing things, and Dusty was signing autographs, and there was Ox Baker, and I was like, that's Ox Baker, and nobody was at his table. Everyone was walking right past him, and I'm like, Ox Baker, and I get up there, and I want to pay for a photo, and he gets up, and he's sitting on a hemorrhoid cushion, and he asks. He needs help to get up. We go behind the curtain, and he asks me to hold him. Uh-huh. He's like, hold me up, brother, you know? And I was like, oh, it's such an honor. Got this great picture with him. And he gave me a bunch of his merchandise autographed for free. No one was buying it.
And
no, it was why he gave it a bunch of me for free, and I was telling him how much. I was like, man, you know, you're a legend. Thank you so much. This is an honor. And I apparently was the only one. But it was awesome, you know. In the picture, you know, it doesn't look like I'm holding him up either.
Cool.
But in this match, they mentioned about how big his hands are. You betcha.
Yeah, the heart punch.
You betcha. Well, no, I mean, he shook my hand, and it was like a baseball mitt.
I don't think he was giving you the heart punch, Johnny. I mean, that's the gimmick of the heart punch is. Because he's able to punch the heart. I mean,
right.
And it probably had something. The psychology in wrestling probably had something to do with his gigantic hands.
Right. I'm just saying that in the match they go, look at the size of his hands. I was like, yeah, that's not just the camera. But here's the neat thing: Dusty had a line too, and Dusty's line was really, really long. And the matches were about to start, and Dusty's line was still going. And I'm like, it's gonna start late, or man, they're gonna start the matches while that's going on. No, Ox Baker, who I had to help up. When they went showtime, he grabs his fucking bullwhip and he runs over into the line, scaring away all the fans still in Dusty's line. while throwing a chair, and chases Dusty to the ring. Dusty gets in the ring, goes, "Oh, Ox, the old, you know, so and so, you couldn't even get into the ring, and you break your hip." And Ox is just walking around, cracking his whip, and then goes back. And then Dusty introduces the show. And I remember thinking, that's A, brilliant on how to break up that line, and B, it made me so happy. So I was like, I just had to hold him up. And when they came time for showtime, he managed to do that. And it was probably one of my favorite parts of that night, to be perfectly honest with you.
That is awesome, yeah. Man. That's totally awesome. I got to say, I thought this is a really good spoiler performance. He's a guy I've liked a lot on the footage. Some of the matches have been okay, but some have been fantastic. Yeah. And Baker does not have the reputation at all of a guy who has good matches. Great character, but a terrible worker is kind of what they always tell him here. But this match is just all psychology and storytelling, and it's a masterpiece. They work around all Baker's limitations, and they push the story forward. I love that Baker did this really cool-looking cross-arm choke, which was awesome. Baker's strikes looked a little poor early on, but they are fine towards the end. The story boiled down to the spoiler going for the claw throughout. Baker's focus was a three-pronged attack. One, he went for the spoiler's mask. Secondly, he would work over spoiler's back. And also would work over spoiler's claw hand. And I love how spoiler would try to get separation from Baker when he went after the mask. And they built to a really fun draw. Again, it was all really strong psych storytelling. And just the key here, really smart work. I thought it was a three-star match. I thought it was all based around psychology and storytelling again. And I thought it was a masterclass because Spoiler never even, when finally towards the end of the match, you finally see him go up to the top rope. I mean, the guy wasn't using his incredible athleticism here to have a great match. He was using his smarts and realizing what Ox Baker could and couldn't do. And they developed a pretty damn good match around it. What were your thoughts here?
There was one spot. First of all, the first clubbering exchange, when they actually just started I don't want to say laying it in, but with the clubbering, then it suddenly was ooh, there we go. You know, it's like slap, just flesh on flesh, just pap, pap, pap. And I'm like, oh, all right. There was one spot, it was odd, where Spoiler gets thrown into the ropes, he's coming at Ox, and Spoiler kind of stops. I think someone was out of position, probably Ox. Well, let's just say, yeah, about what was going to happen. And Ox had to reach over at him to tap his chest, and Spoiler bumped. And Paul Bosch, this is why I love him, instead of pretending it didn't happen, he goes, "The Spoiler drew up that time, but still got it." And I was like, oh, he covered it.
Yep.
He does that a lot, and I love that he does that. And Ox is going after the mask, and it got me thinking, because a lot of people have criticized in matches with American masked wrestlers, especially when the heel's wearing the mask. Why is a babyface going for the mask? Just try to win the match. It never works out for you. You know, it's stupid. And I was thinking, and it hit me. Here's the real reason why they go after the mask. Because if you can loosen it, you can twist it around and blind him. So it's not about embarrassing the guy by ripping off his mask. That's a plus. But you can also use that as strategy to beat the guy. That's why they do it. It's a detriment. It's only held there by a knot. You know, there's not a lock on it. You're taking a risk.
And it's a baby face thing to do in a way.
Of course, but
why is he hiding the face from us? We all need to look at it. Yeah, no, I mean, yeah.
Of course, there's that. That's at the basis of. But whenever someone goes, "Well, it's stupid," I'm like, "There's a logical explanation." What's not logical, and I love Paul because when he's putting the claw on Ox's head, he kept moving it down and stuff, or he couldn't get it in. And Paul was saying the reason he couldn't get it in is because Ox is bald. And not only is he bald, there's no hair for tactile grip. It's just skin. You know, he says, like a lot of guys with no hair, you know, he might put stuff on his head, you know, maybe to grow hair. So, you know, Ox Baker might be rubbing in some sort of hair grow cream from some snake oil salesman, and he just can't get that claw on it because it's slippery. That was hilarious. Because then he grabs Ox's stomach. He goes, now he's got something because that stomach is hairy.
Yeah, it is.
There's something to grab onto. It's a hairy stomach. Paul backed up his point. Oh, he's the best. Towards the end, the spoiler's outside, and he uses a chair, and Ox grabs the chair and just smashes himself on the head with a chair five times and goes like, oh! And I popped. I'm like, God, that's awesome. He's crazy. And then the fight after the bell rules. You know, They just keep going at it, just slugging each other. And I realized, I was like, I just watched... I mean, I love Ox Baker, you know, obviously. But I just watched a really great Ox Baker match.
Yeah, and they don't exist. They don't. This was incredible. I could not believe how good it was. I was like, spoiler match, oh, Ox Baker. And I was so pleasantly surprised. I'm glad we're both able to keep an open mind, because some guys, when they see a name, they're like, there's no way it's going to be good. And both of us are able to, like, okay, well... It was damn good. And
and here's the thing on that. Now, you and I are going to... We're doing this as a project. We're going to watch all through. We're not going to turn anything off.
Right.
If you just see a name and you go, not going to watch it, that's kind of dumb to me. Because if you have the service and you see a name...
Yeah.
And given the quality of what has been provided every week... Why would you maybe give it a couple minutes and then go, not working for me, I'll move on? Exactly. Why would you just not watch it? That makes no sense.
No, I'm with you completely. I mean, it's just, I'm a firm believer in that we're really getting a taste of what Houston's wrestling is like by watching it all. I mean, you get to see all this type of stuff and wonder how you're gonna, you know, you're getting a feel for it and a vibe of the territory and booking decisions and how they go and how they kind of book their things, and it's just neat.
And even if you're watching this and you're like, I'm not digging this or whatever, you know, the Paul Bosch commentary is a lot of fun, and it works to get you into it, or you laugh at some of the silliness. It's there, you know. You got me with that whole, like, Ox Baker, not going to watch it. Give it a shot, you know? It's Houston wrestling.
Exactly. Now, speaking of Paul Bosch, he's a guy I've really come to appreciate, where he is entertaining, but he also is really good at getting the psychology and the story.
Oh, totally.
That some guys, I mean, like, you know, Dick and Cal are funny, right? But I don't think they were great in a great match, they were able to get the psychology over. But I thought their best skill was taking a shitty match and having fun with it.
I think with Dick and Cal, I think with a really exciting match, they're having a great time, and I love the way they call it.
Right.
I really do. But the difference is those house shows for the Prism Network were not really part of any continuity.
Right.
And part of the booking, they were not told anything. They just went out there and flew by the seat of their pants. And they didn't really, all they may know, Bob Backlund and the Sarge, they've been having some issues lately. That's pretty much the end of storyline. Yeah. And Paul, though, this is his television show. And he's also the owner. So I really can't compare the two, because I'm like, one is the owner of a promotion. Now, if you want to compare, talk about owners.
Vince.
Who do Vince. Or David Crockett, Bill Watts, you know, you get into the guys who are the owners who are doing the commentary, and then compare that, I think Paul is heads and tails at the top.
Yeah, I was always a Watts guy, but yeah, I like Paul Bosch a lot.
Yeah, but you know what, I wasn't a Watts guy because Watts would annoy me.
Yeah.
I didn't like a lot of his bullshit, you know.
And he still came across as a bully on commentary, too.
That well, and also I was just like, oh, he's a fucking redneck, you know. Like I said, I cheered when they buried him in the fucking flag, you know.
Right.
In the safety of my living room.
In the safety of your living room, yeah.
But Paul Bosch, I'm like, I like Paul Bosch. You know, he seems like I wrote this down to somebody. He seems like everybody's grandpa.
Yep.
You know, for Houston, he seems like that's everybody's grandpa, and he's got that vibe, and I think that's what makes him utterly charming.
Yeah, he has
that
classy vibe to him.
Yeah, and he's no, and you realize this is his product, and the way he promotes his product is tremendous. It's he, like I said, he explains botches and makes them make sense.
Yep.
We'll get to. Like weird referee decisions or stuff, and he makes it all work, you know, with an explanation. Even if the explanation is convoluted, he gets there and makes it work enough. And, you know, that's my thing.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So to
Johnny
see a
Logic,
to see, and I just do that for fun, to see a master do that.
Yeah, where, to see a master of Johnny Logic actually do it and make money off it.
Exactly, but his business depends on it. And he's amazing. I mean, I laughed a little at first when I first started watching him. I was like goofing on him and stuff, and I still will goof on like the hair gel thing or whatever. But boy,
I was
entertained. You know, if it was just he's having trouble getting the claw on, well, here's maybe why.
Yeah.
Like, no, I can't say enough about. I've become the biggest Paul Bosch fan on the planet, dude.
All right, man. Well, let's move over to the next match. And that's Bob Sweet and Dick Slater from March 26, 1982. And I can't say, I absolutely love this match. We get a really nice tie-up to start where it's nice sniff and snug. Then we get these big bombs thrown where these guys are just throwing hands. And then they mix in high spot and Slater controls with a headlock. And this was like, now it's like real Mid-Atlantic wrestling style feel to it, along with the hard-hitting style of Texas wrestling. All the stuff looks snug and tight. The execution of moves has been really great. Like, this is, like, you couldn't see a hole through their work. It's that tight. Slater gets caught up in the ropes, and that sets up the heat. Sweden posts Slater's arm on the post, and Sweden's after the arm. Slater's still showing fire. A hair pull puts out the fire. And Sweden's arm work is basic, but fucking nasty. Everything is effective, and Slater's selling the arm big. Hacksaw Duggan's out. Gino's out. Spike pile driver on Slater. Tommy Rich in for the save. And then we get promos setting up a Tommy Rich versus Nick Bockwinkel match. And these promos were fantastic. 3.5 stars on everything. I thought the action, along with the post-match angles and the promos, makes me hot for Bockwinkel Rich because they have such a different dynamic between the hillbilly and the champion of Beverly Hills. It seems like they'd have a great, great match and great chemistry. But this match was freaking the bomb. What do you think of it, man?
Okay, I gotta admit, at first I was bored with the match, the first half. Because it was a lot of, okay, Dick Slater. By the way, it's Dick Slater night here on the NWA Classic show with me and V.
Yeah, because
there's a lot of Dick Slater. And we can see all aspects of him. And here he's a baby face. And it was kind of like, okay. And then I got pulled away and I had to take care of something for 5 minutes and I let it run. And I come back and I sit down and go, okay, back to this boring match. And I'm like, what the fuck happened? Because it was awesome.
Yeah.
It was slow open. But I got to basically where Slater, instead of just being a babyface, started selling, doing his staggering selling and his staggering fight back, you know, come back. And I'm going to call it fight back for now. But and I'm like, oh, I love this. And Sweet Dan, who last week I was like, you know, yeah. I'm like, yeah, pretty good here. You know, it's not a carry job. He's pretty good here. You know, I liked it. And then by the end of it, I was like super into the match. I thought it was a really good match. We did get a Paul doing a monsoon. He's going to literally chop his head off.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, they're like Al Qaeda.
Yeah, yeah, almost like the psychology of the match felt different because it felt like Sweden should got the heat early and then Slater should have made the comeback. It's like the roles were reversed on the structure of the match, and it made it more engaging for me because, you know, I am a structure guy, but I like when they can throw structure out and reverse it a little bit.
Oh, I love it.
And yeah, and I thought it worked here.
But then all the arm work. Was getting lots of arm work.
Yes.
And it looked really hard and snug. And then I wrote down, Pete's pants are tight.
Yep. It's right up my alley, man.
Yep.
If I was wearing any pants.
If you've been wearing pants. Yeah. I know. I should have known.
Yes.
Like, as soon as I saw that arm work, pants.
Pants down.
Pants down.
Pete's porn.
But here's the thing that I'm annoyed with. Bruce, if you're listening, if you're going to keep teasing us with these Gino Tommy Rich interactions, I want to see that goddamn match.
Well, we have a tag match. We have a tag.
I want the solo match. I want the cage one or whatever.
Yeah, I know. That's the big one. Yeah, that's the big one.
Yeah, I think he's purposely building it up for us, Pete.
Building the drama.
That's how a promoter does it, right?
Maybe. That's a wrestling promoter.
Exactly. But to the promos, here's Tommy Rich. And I remember thinking this. Okay, Angry Ray, he's going, like, I'd just like to thank you, Mr. Bosch, for giving me this here opportunity, you know, and I really do appreciate it at the AWA Heavyweight Champion. You know, thank you, Mr. Bosch. And he's got his stupid Cousin Oliver hair from the Brady Bunch.
Yep.
And I remember, because we didn't get to see any Tommy Rich growing up.
Yeah, you know. Championship Wrestling, yep.
No, by the time we got TBS or whatever, that was done, you know.
Yeah.
There was no Tommy Rich. Just magazines. And a lot of times, old magazines where he was a fiery young baby face because he didn't do a lot for a bit until he popped back up in Memphis and started being a heel. And every time we'd see him with that hair and that dumb grin on the cover of, like, PWI, me and my buddies in Jersey thought he was a total fucking goober. It was like, ugh, this guy. And, like, maybe that's why he's not quite as over in Texas.
Could be.
He's a Georgia thing. And like, oh, look at this goober. We like big, tough guys. But, of course, Tommy Rich, all-time great. One of my favorite wrestlers of all time, to be perfectly honest. It was just, I remember as a kid, you don't get to see a guy work and you're just judging him on his look.
Yeah.
Just like, ugh. You know, when I see pictures of him bleeding, I go, oh, okay. But generally, like, I see pictures of the last Battle of Atlanta and I was in the... from the pictures, I was cheering for Buzz.
Right.
Paul's suit is tremendous. And then we got Bach. And he saunters in. Tommy walks away. Bach just saunters in, like, through the camera shot.
Yeah, and it looks like he's like the crowd stinks. Like, he has his nose in the air. I mean, it really is a great presentation.
It's fantastic. And I started to try to write down the lines, and I just threw the pen down because I'm like, no, I'm going to sit here and enjoy the fucking Nick Bockwinkel. He's like, by the time you see this, I will have already beaten that man in the ring and shown him. He's like, I am superb. I am consummate. He's like, he's just another one of those white sockers. And soxers. And I was like, I've never heard, like, common folk called white sockers, as in socks that they wear. And I'm like, I've never heard that as a derived. It's like ham and eggers. I was like, well, who doesn't like ham and eggs? Did these guys make this shit up and it just works because they're so disdainful with it? And then he gets to the end and he basically just says, add to that, you know what? I could care less. No. It was, Bosch said something to him. He's like, and maybe you're going to fall off a cliff. And he just turns like, I could care less what you think or something. And Bosch is great at selling his frustration. But then he turns right around, and because this is right around when I guess he started using Nick and the AWA, he goes,
yep,
that's Nick Bockwinkel, the AWA champion. The AWA belt is recognized all over the world as a major title. I was like, oh, okay, that must be right around this time.
Yep.
Where he switched over. But Bach is so disdainful and so awesome. He literally is one of my favorite heel promos.
Agreed. He's one of my favorites of all time. Yeah, he was one of my, I think he was in my top five of greatest wrestler of all time. I think I had Flair, Mysterio, Liger, and I think it was Bockwinkel and Funk.
Mr. Lawler, that suit to a funeral.
Yeah, freaking awesome. And on that note, man, why don't we take a break and listen to some other shows that you can be listening to on the PWO Place to Be Nation Network, and we'll be right back.
The PWO PTBN feed has changed its name, now known simply as Pro Wrestling Only, so it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
And we are back, and we are looking at Hacksaw Jim Duggan versus Buzz Sawyer from December 13th, 1985. And I was at this match.
Oh, no shit.
Live,
really?
Yes, yep. I went to this one, and we saw, so I was there for the last, our last two matches tonight. I was there live. I was there, my father was like a Christmas present.
Oh, and awesome.
And so this is me and my brother, we went to this one, and I was like hoping that this would pop up, because this was one hell of a card I went to. It was one of my all-time favorite wrestling moments.
I can imagine.
Memories, because there was also another freaking, I want to say this might have had the Jake Roberts and Lord Humongous Cage match on it also. Oh. I gotta remember, I'm pretty sure that's what it was. And I this is a Coal Miner's Glove match, and so these are kind of interesting. I was a little in my memory I thought this was like a bloody brawl, but it wasn't even like that at all. Like Matt D and I were talking, it was more like a big WWE stint match where it had its moments and postage stamp moments, but I still enjoyed a lot of this. This is one of my favorite feuds of all time. Like Doug and Buzz Sawyer, I could watch wrestle constantly because it was so hate-filled and bloody, and you just believe these guys didn't like each other. And in reality, they did not care for each other in real life either. I loved how they used a stip to set up another stip match, which I was going bonkers for. So here we have the Coal Miner's Glove, and that sets up the Dog Collar match later in the month, which I just love, which is an incredible Dog Collar match. We get some brawling early. Buzz is after Duggan's back. He worked over Duggan's back with a chair. A couple of the chair shocks looked a little weak, though. Buzz, though, would keep on stomping and kicking him back, everything after the back. He's posted Duggan's back into the guardrail, hooks on the bear hug, and, I mean, just totally dismantling Duggan's back, which I really liked. And then the crowd went nuts every time Duggan tried to climb the pole. So it kind of had, like, cause, I mean, I was just at the Royal Rumble where you're in anticipation of who's next, so you're counting. And it was kind of like it's kind of how it felt like watching Duggan climb the pole to get to the glove. It was more like you're more into the climb than the rest of the whole match. And I thought they did a really good job doing this. And once he gets the glove, the crowd is going bananas, and we get the finish and a great angle to set up the Dog Collar match. I thought the match was really was a fun match, but topped off by a great Duggan promo. Gave it 3.25 stars match, 3-star match. I enjoyed it, really liked it, but it really missed the blood. I thought, I mean, because these guys had a blood feud. I mean, just one of the bloodiest feuds in the history of wrestling, and we didn't get blood here. I was a little disappointed, and especially in my memory, in my mind, I remember seeing a bloody brawl, and it didn't happen. But hey, still a great moment and stuff.
It'll always be bloody to you.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I'm a big Hacksaw Duggan fan. As a kid, I absolutely loved him, and he was like my favorite wrestler.
Oh, yeah.
And so cool getting to meet him in real life, and telling swapping and South stories of them. Super totally. Duper guy. And yeah, great match. What do you think of it, man?
I love this, and for so many reasons. One, A, Duggan versus Sawyer, you can't go wrong. And here's the other thing. Coal miner's glove matches. I love them. It is one of my favorite gimmick matches. And it became so just from magazines, because I remember thinking nothing sounded fucking cooler or more badass than a coal miner's glove match. And I don't know why. You know, and then you see it, and they had the ones that were just covered in like chain mail. But yeah. Paul Bosch, though, being one for realism, got an actual coal miner's glove. It was just leather, but there was obviously metal on it. Like, it was metal enforced. And that's a real coal miner's glove. And real quick, I'm going to defend the gimmick, because a lot of fans I see, the smart fans now, it's like one of their least favorite gimmick matches. And it's pretty much only because they're generally remembering Sting versus Jake Roberts.
Yeah, that was terrible.
I mean, which by the way, I never thought was all that bad, but... You know,
I didn't think the match wasn't that bad until the finish with the snake. I thought it was terrible.
But
I thought the actual match wasn't that bad. I'm with you.
Well, and I also have the memory. I remember I hadn't watched wrestling in a while, and WCW was on, and I got the pay-per-view for free for some reason, and it was a good memory for me.
Yeah.
Anyway. And it's on a pole, because they're all like, on a pole, that's so Russo. And I'm like, yeah, Russo killed it.
Yeah.
But it doesn't make on a pole shitty when it was cool.
Yeah, this is before Russo, so fuck that. Yeah,
you know, but you get that too, like, on a pole. And then, let's face it, a lot of it is, I don't understand what's so dangerous about a coal miner's glove. And it's from a bunch of people who just, I'm sorry, have no idea. It's not their world. And I mean, it's funny, but here's the thing. It's not my world. I didn't grow up in a coal mining town. But, you know.
But you damn well know it's got to hurt.
But I know full well what it must be.
So let me explain the psychology of a real coal miner's glove. Okay, you put them because you work in the mines, and you're carrying an axe, and you have it so you don't break your freaking hand on the rock. Mm-hmm. That's how hard these things are. They are there so if you hit your hand on a rock, your hand won't break. Okay?
Right.
So think about that when you're hitting somebody in the damn face with it. It's not supposed to break on a rock, God damn it.
Yeah, living in your suburbs, I don't know, the coal miners, fuck you.
Yeah, fuck you and your high horse you rode in on, you bastard.
Fuck you and your soccer practice, douchebag. Anyway, I thought the match ruled. There was one real cool spot where Jim had already gotten the glove. And so Buzz is blocking his right, you know, and Jim knows he's going to block the right because that's got the glove. So he goes left with his punch.
Yes.
And it's maybe 2 seconds long. And I'm like, that's fucking genius. That's a great bit of impromptu working, going, all right, of course you're going to block this. Well, you block this, you're going to get my left. That's awesome. And then Slater comes in, and this is exactly at the time they first started showing Mid-South Wrestling on that weird UHF channel we got in New Jersey for a little while that had wrestling every night from all over the country. Because I remember the Slater Mad Dog team, because they were kind of a duo.
Yeah,
Fighting Duggan around this time, and I loved them as heels, and I loved Dark Journey, and I loved Jim Duggan. I would get into number one. By the way, the running at the end, all the guys not shirtless because A, they don't have to break it up. B, no one's bleeding, and they're wearing some spiffy '80s style sweaters, and I'm like, I had those sweaters. I'm embarrassed by them now. But
I know.
Oh yeah, but Jim. I'm like Jim. I know him. He cuts a promo, and this is the Duggan I fell in love with. Now, I appreciate tongue sticking out WWF Jim Duggan. He made a lot of money and made a lot of people happy.
Yep.
This is the Duggan I fell in love with, which is the same Duggan, just less special.
Yeah.
You know,
that's fair.
Because he, and maybe the fact that he really hates fucking Busser, as apparently everybody did.
Yeah.
He cuts the pros. Let me tell you something, Mr. Bosch. You know, so he took all my Coal Miner's Glove match. Now he wants one. Because Coal Miner's Glove is his match. Dog Collar is Buzz's match.
Yep.
And now Buzz is like, okay, I'm going to take him on in his match. I'm like, that's a great little bit of book, because we all know Doug and Coal Miner's Glove. It's his match, you know, from the cage with DiBiase.
Yep.
Dog Collar, that's, of course, the Mad Dog has a dog collar as his signature match, which, again, of course, that match is so goddamn good.
Yeah.
But he says, he's like, here's what's coming at you. You know, 270 pounds of anger, fury, and revenge. Tough guy, and walks away. And I was like, fuck yeah.
Wasn't that a great promo? Fired up. He believed every damn word he said, and he meant it. And
okay.
Awesome. So, I mean, 2 minutes, and it got over the point. You didn't need a long soliloquy. It was beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. And
this is, like I said, this is the Duggan that I became. I mean, I already had a thing for Doug, and I'd seen him live once because he was a last-minute replacement in a Pro Wrestling USA card, and there was something about him. I was like, that's my guy. And when I finally got to see him on TV, this is the Duggan I got to see. This guy who's a hippie who kicks ass down, surrounded by giant other big men, and he just kicks their ass and bleeds. And I was like, he's my favorite wrestler. You know, he was... Like I loved Jimmy Valiant at the time so much too, but I knew he was done, you know. And Duggan, for me too, that Mid South period into UWF, then he left. He was my favorite wrestler by far.
Yeah, and I don't think we got any. I mean, we got tons of Duggan and Sawyer against each other in Mid South on footage, but I don't think we ever got a Coal Miner's Glove match. And I think this is our first. So of the I mean, we've gotten dog collars, we've gotten other stiffs. So I thought this was really cool to see this a gimmick match too. You know?
Yeah. Let me ask you this: you were at this show, which by the way, jealous as fuck, and you expected blood in this. Was there blood in other matches?
Yeah, there's the main event here. Butch Reed bleeds at the end. And,
oh, so match. Okay. You know, you don't even notice it until the end. So I was just wondering if...
And if I'm not mistaken, I swear Jake the Snake and Lord Humongous was on here, and Jake fucking bled like a motherfucker.
But maybe there was one of those, look, you know, you're not all going to bleed tonight.
Yeah.
Which kind of makes sense, too, because if Coal Miner's Glove, he gets one shot, you're out. You know, so...
Yeah. And, you know, I agree. I mean, you don't need to have three matches that are all bloody. You know, that sometimes Crockett, I think they used the blade too much. Where
I gotta be honest,
Dusty would blade, Flair would blade, and then Arn and Tully would blade. I mean, Wahoo would blade. I mean, they were bleeding from like four or five matches.
I was at the kickoff show at Veterans Stadium in Philly for the Great American Bash '86.
Oh,
and
nice.
That's the one that's known for, like, what they, like, almost every match had blood. Wahoo got the razor caught in his head, and
was that Flair almost... Animal or Flair Hawk?
Flair Hawk.
Okay.
And followed by Dusty Animal in a cage against the Andersons, and definitely the most anticlimactic. Like, Flair Hawk was, like, amazing at the time.
Really good. Yeah.
And now this. but yeah, there was blood in almost every match. It was a big deal. They almost got kicked out of Philly over this.
Oh, wow.
The cancer was there and almost stopped the show, apparently, because Wahoo's blade was stuck in his head, and he was at ringside and saw that. Yeah.
who did Wahoo work? Manny Fernandez? No.
Jimmy Garvin.
Garvin, okay. Oh, God.
In strap match, because they were doing all gimmick matches,
right?
It was a big deal. I didn't realize at the time, but read later, Meltzer talking about they almost shut the show down while it was going on. But the thing is, I think that's what made Philly Philly.
Yes,
made ECW was there was a lot of people at that show in the baseball stadium who then went off and like, we're Philly, we want blood. Not like they haven't always, but.
Right.
Jesus, that was the bloodiest show I've ever been to, now that you mention it.
Wow. But hey, man, we're going to transition to the main event.
Like Sam Houston.
Yeah, which is Butch Reed, Dick Slater, no disqualification. This is a pretty famous feud in Mid-South, and I as a kid, I loved it. I remember my father, it was weird because he thought it was really good that I, like growing up, my favorite football player was Walter Payton, and one of my favorite wrestlers was Butch Reed, so he liked the fact that I didn't discriminate based on color and stuff. So for my father, it was a big thing, and that's another reason why I got to go to the show, was because Butch Reed was working on top.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I just love this. Butch just punishing Slater with the big soup bones and a big rail toss by Butch. And you got to remember, Butch just got out of the neck brace caused by Slater. That's part of the story going on here. And Slater's focusing on Reed's neck on the Heat segment, then post the arm, and then Slater's dissecting the arm of Reed, and Slater's just wrenching the arm. Stomp the arm, and Reed reverses Slater and posts him, and it's comeback time, and fists are flying, and in a really great revenge spot, he posts Slater's arm, and then he rams it into the corner, which is just like, payback, bitch, and Reed runs into a knee and is stopped cold. Slater then runs into a Reed punch, and Reed maintains his attack, and at this point, the crowd is like 100% with Reed. The crowd is right where they need it, and Slater takes out the ref, and then he begins to wear out Reed with some knuckle dusters. The ref is out, and then we get a second ref. First ref is back. Reed is a bloody mess. Officials are out, and then we get a great post match with Slater. 3 3/4 star match. A lot of people hate on the Mid-South set really weren't a fan of this because of the finish, because it is a no DQ and we get a DQ. But I thought it was just because it was such a spectacle that I could actually live with the finish. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of used to crappy finishes from the 80s anyway. But I love the match. What about you? And talk about the finish.
Before I go into the match, which again, awesome fucking match, I'm going to talk about this finish. Because I have two explanations. The first one, actually, while it's going on and I'm doing my logic of what I'm watching, actually becomes the actual explanation. And a neat thing when people say, well, they did a DQ and a no DQ, they never say there was a disqualification. It's a minor point, but after it all happens, they just say, the ref isn't saying anyone's disqualified. He says Butch Reed is still the champion. That's all he says. They never say you're disqualified, Dick Slater. They never call a disqualification. He ends it. And throughout this match, the ref, who's the ref? Was that Tommy Gilbert?
Yep, one of them.
Okay. No, I mean the main one, the one who had enough.
Yes.
Okay. Throughout the match, Tommy Gilbert is doing the old, and this used to annoy the fuck out of me as a kid, but I think this is what they were doing. When I'd be like, okay, it's a Texas death match, anything goes, and the ref's counting and shit. And in Bob Backlund's book, he talks about some match he was having that was a Texas death where the ref, Dick Kroll, forgot the step and it kept breaking them and counting them until one of them got him close enough to tell him. He's like, it's no DQ, stop it. So refs can be forgetful. But in this one, he kept expressing, and I think maybe a lot of people just don't like the fact when the referee is a character in a match, but he's constantly like not breaking stuff up, but like throwing up his hands like, oh, don't do that. Like, he knows it's no DQ, but he's a referee, gosh darn it. You know, and he does, you know, and he's going to try to just tell people not to do that. Because why, why else is he out there? You know, and he's a performer. So he gets the fish, and what happens is, eventually, after enough of his kvetching, don't do that to him. Oh, guys, no. Dick Slater just drops an elbow on him. Like, shut up, dum-dum. And, thinking, no DQ match, get away with it, whatever I want. I'm thinking, you know, they're going to explain this. The referee's going to say something along the lines of, you can do whatever you want to each other, but once you lay your hand on the referee, fuck you. This is over, match is done, and, you know, that's it. And that's exactly what the explanation was. because Tommy Gilbert comes out and tells Dick Slater that. And they pull it. And yet, while the turmoil's going on, you got Grizzly Smith trying to pull his decrepit ass up into the fucking ring. And he can't. He can't climb. He's got to go to the stairs. And and so he almost falls off the ring apron. And, yeah, sorry, you know, to talk ill of the dead or whatever, but apparently Grizzly Smith wasn't the nicest guy in the world. So
no.
Fuck him. Yeah, I wrote that, like, he's a giant piece of shit. Because he's about 8 feet tall. He's a scary-looking giant hillbilly. And...
Hey, half the Kentuckians.
Hey, I know. That's my people. that explains the incest.
Yeah.
part of the Kentuckians. You really got to ruin Kentucky even more with that stereotype, dude. But... No, not you. Grizzly. But that's exactly what happens. Butch Reed bleeding like a sieve. But while all this is going on during the promo, Paul's what the fuck is going on here? And like he wasn't filled in on the finish, which would be odd to me. I would imagine he would be.
Yeah.
But he didn't look like he was happy with it. And he explains it. It gets all very convoluted. And then he ends with, and I'm going to steal this from him, because he just goes, this whole convoluted thing, looks at the camera and goes, so that is the explanation. You know, just, he literally says, I know this doesn't make any sense. Here's our explanation for it. And he didn't look too happy about it, but a few other things.
Let me touch on that. Finish.
Please. What did you think?
What about the finish?
No, while you were there live, what did you think?
It didn't bother me at all. I mean, as a kid, you're just going nuts. I mean, I was just, you know, I just want to see Butch Reed beat the crap out of, and I'm watching my hero get, you know, laid out. So,
and he keeps the belt, so you don't give a shit, right?
Yeah, he still has the belt. And at the time, I didn't know this was like one of his last weeks in Houston. I mean, he'd be gone by the end of December.
And Slater would be gone, too, because you could see in this, he's getting into New York shape.
Yeah. But part of the thing was Bill Watts bought into Houston and won a percentage. And part of the deal was that he was being charged with creative. So I don't think he had to run anything by Paul Bosch at this point.
Oh, so that would explain that, because Paul didn't seem like he was a big fan of that finish.
You know, they at the time it was more Peter Burkholz and Watts were working closely, and Paul Bosch was kind of out of the business at this point, but was they'd use him and shoot around for the TV show for him, and he'd still do announcing, but he wasn't doing any of the behind the scenes stuff.
Okay.
Yeah,
that makes sense. He was an older fella at the time. Yeah. That makes sense, though, because when he's calling it, when he just looks at the TV and goes, it's like he should have just thrown his hands up. That's the explanation.
Yep. Or John, they were like Macaulay Culkin. Went, that's the explanation, with his feet and hands on his thing.
But I just want to also mention, there's a cop at ringside who looks like Shaft if he was put on uniform duty. did you catch him?
Yes.
He's got a cool fro and sunglasses. He's brother. But he's not, he's in a uniform, but he looks like he's a motorcycle cop, and it's a black leather jacket with a badge and a black pants. I mean, he's definitely a cop, and he like looks like the baddest cop in the world. I'm like,
yeah, I don't know if it was this one or it was on the Doc Gordy match that we'll cover next week, where one of the cops caught the paper being thrown into the ring, and it was a black badass looking black guy.
This guy it looks like just the coolest motherfucker alive. I don't know, I think that's Slater's rap at the beginning.
Yes, calling him. What was the line he used?
Coconut head,
yeah.
Which is like, people go, is that racist or not? And here's where it gets weird with this, because if it was generally just the white Southern dude yelling at the black babyface, "Hey, coconut head," you go, racist. But this is the white guy with his hot black girlfriend.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, is we've mentioned part of the angle here is her, him getting heat because he's got a black girlfriend in the South, his real life girlfriend, by the way, and ask Sting.
Yeah.
And Butch Reed telling her that, you know, she, basically that she's a race traitor and she needs to get her ass back in the kitchen.
Yeah.
So it's very complex what they're going for here. So because of that, when he said coconut head, my mind went to, he just said he's stupid.
Yeah, I was going because it felt more of like an insult to a Samoan than actually the black guy, to tell you the truth.
No, they crack them open with their heads, but you know, the blacks have hard heads too in wrestling. Come on, we know all the racist stereotypes.
And coconut is also more of a Hispanic insult, like you're right. Brown on the outside, white on the inside, blah blah blah.
But never thought of that one. You know,
because my ex girlfriend was Hispanic back in the day, and her brothers used to call her coconut because she dated me because she was brown on the outside, white on the inside.
Coconut, really?
Yeah.
Rio is normally the go-to insult for that. I've never heard coconut. Was she filled with milky goodness?
Back in the day, she was. I have no idea about now.
Great. I stuck a straw in her and took a sip.
But for a black person, the same insult could apply, you know?
Guys, never thought of it that way. But I'm thinking, when you said coconut head, I'm thinking, is it racist if the guy with the black girlfriend says it? I put it to you, and let us know on Twitter.
Yeah.
And, but here's my, also, I have my other explanation of this convoluted storyline. And I call this the Dan Shockett explanation. For those of you who don't know, Dan Shockett was the original heel writer in the Pro Wrestling magazines in the 70s and early 80s. And the Dan Shockett explanation is far easier. They're all crooked. They're just fucking, the refs are crooked. The refs are fucking crooked. Grizzly Smith's fucking crooked. You know, and that's why they stole the belt from Dick Slater, who, by the way, when he comes back, he says, it's a no DQ match. What the fuck?
Right. Well, man, on that note, Johnny, do you got anything you want to plug or anything you want to try off?
I do. I want to plug, I'm sure, you know, you as well. This past Sunday, Super Bowl Sunday, we recorded our final Titans of Wrestling. Me, you, what are those guys' names?
What are they? Little those hacks.
We recorded it. It's going to be dropping soon, and I hope everyone enjoys it because I thoroughly did.
Yeah, it was a big goodbye. It meant a lot to all four of us. You know, we've gone each other. We've talked about it. No need to, you know, get all sappy again.
Oh, no. Trust me. The show gets sappy enough.
Yeah.
Believe me. But no, check it out, because here's the thing I like the best about it. We knew it was the last one, and we all brought it, and the old energy was back for one last time. And so check it out.
Yeah, and follow me at Twitter at Titans O' Wrestling. If you sign up for NWAOnDemand.com, you get the first week free. Check it out. Can't hurt to scope around. And if you're one of the guys who are like, man, I want to watch it on my Roku, what is that app? Let me pull it on my phone real quick. It's the Tubio. Yep, Tubio app. And then you can launch it from your iPhone or Android to your Roku and watch it on your television, man. So, and it's awesome. Check it out. And man, have a great week watching wrestling. Thanks.
He came from Texas seeking fortune and fame. Rose pretty quickly to the top of the game. Defender of the downtrodden, king of the hill, tag team champion with Al Madrill. Before a black and white TV in the middle of the night, I'm lying on the floor, I'm bathed in blue light. The telecast's in Spanish, I can understand some, and I need justice in my life. Here it comes, the Kai is mine.